And welcome again to The Age Stage. I'm Brendan Telfer. This is The Age Stage on RWPFM 98.7, 98.3. Keeping the chill, we hope, out of your bones these rather cool days. Hoping that you're warming up and you're close to your radio. Your host of The Age Stage is Vicky Barber. Vicky, hello.
Hello, Brendan. How are you?
Welcome back. Another chilly old week. You're doing all right? You're rugged up? You're all good?
I am. I've always got my nanny rug around me, so I'm happy.
Beautiful. And today, Vicky, a couple of very interesting subjects. Our regular guests, of course, but the grey nomads, they're on the move. A $19 billion caravan industry.
That's a massive industry. We'll be very interested to speak with Rob Lucas, who's the CEO of the Caravan Association of Victoria.
And indeed, and the Country Women's Association.
Yes, it's going through a revamp,
they're making a comeback.
Yes.
Which is marvellous. But more importantly, we have our guests in the studio. Kim and Peter are here.
We do. So welcome, Kim and Peter, to The Age Stage this week.
Hi, thank you. Lovely to be back.
Kim, yeah, likewise.
It's been ages, Kim, isn't it?
It has. It's been a couple of months, actually.
Wow, that's Stuart. He's getting around. So you're deputising for Stuart today.
I am.
Yes. It's marvellous that you're here. And we thank you very much indeed for your support, of course, coming as it does from the Village Baxter, the Village Glen, and also Freedom to Go, Encore Living, Carrum Downs as well. So thank you very much indeed for your support, Peter. Thank you very much indeed for being here. Great to have your company. Vicky?
Yes, we wanted to talk to you both today about home care and home care packages. So this is an initiative that started in February this year.
Some changes in February.
So can you give us a little bit of an outline initially of what home care is, what it does, and then we'll sort of dive a bit deeper into how it can affect the individual as well.
Oh, okay.
Who's going to jump in?
Yeah, I'll start. It should be ladies first, shouldn't it?
It should be. I was actually looking at Kim.
You're looking at Kim and I spoke. How rude of me.
It's like ventriloquism.
I'll set the scene for Kim.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
On the 28th of February this year, they deregulated the home care market, which meant that it turned the whole thing on its head upside down. Prior to that, home care was initiated by the federal government. And what people actually were assessed for home care, and then they waited for a provider to provide them with the services. Now, since the 28th of February, people are assessed for home care, they get granted the package, and then they go and find service providers to deliver the services to them.
So I actually have to go out now and find the provider.
So it's put this consumer in control mm-hmm. of their circumstance rather than being reactive to a provider. So there still has to be providers.
Yes.
They still have to manage the money, but the owner of the package, being the resident, the home care resident chooses who supplies the services and what those services are, and now I'll defer to Kim.
And the resident can now choose to change providers.
All right, so if I'm unhappy with a provider,
you can say, you know what, I actually want to change and I want to go to someone else.
Right.
Does that have to be mandated by somebody, though? Who's oversighting this whole process and who's making those initial assessments about qualification and stuff? Sorry, Vicky.
So initially you'll go through the My Age Care website and get an assessment through someone from the government, and they'll decide that you need a package and that you're eligible for a package, and then you go on a waiting list and wait for the government to allocate you a package. And then once you've got your package and you find the provider that you like, and you go through a process of setting up your package and you get services. And then if you decide you don't like the provider, that is you as the consumer's choice to change.
And what is my obligation to the government or the portal where I have found this provider in the first place or whatever? Am I informing people as I go about my thinking and my reasoning?
Once you decide to change to someone else, you then go to the new person and they can assist that change process for you and get a new reference number through the My Age Care portal, and you can either let your provider know that way, they can find out afterwards, or you can let your provider know at the time that you're not happy. But it is very much consumer driven now.
Okay. But am I finding my provider only via My Age Care, or?
That's one way. And the providers are all advertising in the local paper, on the radio.
Yes. So that they are.
It's a marketplace.
That's what I was about to say. I've seen more and more of this style of advertising than I ever have previously.
Yes.
You know, maybe I'm more in the market now by being on The Age Stage. So people are actively
promoting their services.
Yeah. Services.
Yes, right. That's right. And Kim, explain to us, there are four levels of packages, aren't there?
There are. With the home care packages, there's a level one package, which is a very low level of service, and they tend to be people that require very little care, maybe once a week shopping. There's not a lot of funding with a level one package.
Right.
A level two package is probably one of the most common ones, and that if you were looking for just hours of care, like a person coming in to give you some assistance with cleaning or personal care, you might be looking at 3 or 4 hours a week of service. And then that progresses up to a level four package, which is a lot more funding and a lot more care.
Right. And but this is in my own home or retirement village home.
Yep. In your own home, yes. Wherever home is.
Wherever that is, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
How am I crossing over those thresholds and satisfying that I have crossed over a threshold?
That process is still being refined, because at the moment when you have too much care for one package and you really need to move up to another one, you've got to go back through the My Aged Care portal and go back on a waiting list and wait for a higher package.
My provider is assisting me with that
process? Your provider will assist you with that process, but in the meantime you will probably have to pay private services to make up that gap in care need.
Where is the money coming from to do all this?
The money is coming a lot more from the consumer these days than it ever did. It is costing people a lot more than what they used to pay, which is part of the consumer-driven approach to it, that now that people are being asked to pay more, they're given more control over what it is they're being asked to pay for.
How does that impact if I'm on the full pension, for example, you know, I don't have a lot to spare? Is this part of an add-on to the pension?
If you're a full pensioner, there is no income-tested fee.
Right, okay.
The income-tested fee is designed, and the concept is that if you've got assets over and above your pension,
yes,
you should use those assets for your care.
Right.
Or a proportion of them. And there is a test which people must fill in called the income-tested fee, mm-hmm. which is some paperwork you send off to Centrelink. Or Medicare?
Centrelink.
And then they do an assessment based on what you tell them.
Right.
And then they'll write back to you and tell you what your daily fee is.
Right.
Yeah.
And you also, even as a pensioner, pay a small daily fee anyway that's capped by government at about, I think it's 17% of the pension.
Right.
Which for some people can be the difference between whether they do or don't actually pick up a package.
Although I think it's not quite right, Kim.
No, because that can be negotiated.
It can. The provider can say, I won't charge you that fee. So the government set some rules for us as providers that we can charge up to a fee per day.
Up to a certain amount.
Yeah. Yes, and it's our choice whether we do. So there's some negotiation between the client being the person receiving the home care and the provider of what that fee is. The income-tested fee is non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so
it is a little bit confusing. Do you find that people are coming to you a little bit confused, asking for advice?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Particularly the income-tested fee confuses people, because people think if I'm paying an extra $50 a week to the provider, they should be providing me with $50 a week more care. But we get $50 a week taken away from your government subsidy, so the provider actually gets no more money to provide care for you when there's an income-tested fee.
Right.
So at each of the four levels, I think the level one package is about, $15,000 a year in services?
Right.
Now, if you were on a level one package and you had an income-tested fee of $2.50 a day, it doesn't mean to say that it's costing that $15,000 plus $2.50 a day. They take the $2.50 off the $15,000, and that leaves us with a pool of money at the end to deliver those services to you.
Right. Mm. Okay.
It is a bit complicated.
It is. It sounded very complicated. Do you think that we're still in this sort of, you know, teething stage from the changes as of February 28th, and you know, there's improvement or people are assessing it to ensure that this program or process actually is viable, but does actually work for all parties? I know you're saying it's consumer-driven.
I'm thinking it's pretty early days. I mean, there are two issues that we talked about off-air, wasn't it? The first one is it's a new system, and My Aged Care is a very complicated website, so they're still having teething problems with that.
And there's upgrades happening all the time. I got an email about another one this week.
Yes.
And the government clearly out of the healthcare budget, in the annual budget, set aside funds for residential care and for home care. And they're setting aside a lot more funds for home care, the premise being that it's cheaper to service people at home than in residential care. So that's happening. They are providing more packages Australia-wide. However, at this stage, we as providers, Kim and I have talked about this, we as providers aren't yet seeing those packages come through. So we've got lots of people who've been assessed for a package.
Like 30,000 being released by government, 13, but you don't know who's actually
correct.
Yeah, we haven't
using
seen
them
all.
Yet.
So right. We've got a lot of people on a waiting list who've been assessed for a package, waiting for the letter from the government to say, we've granted you a package.
Right.
So even though they've been assessed and they have need, because there's no package given to them, there's no funding. So they are waiting for that.
And how long can people be waiting for? Are we talking months as well?
We had an example today where a person was assessed 2 years ago and just got a package.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, therein lies a major problem because typically these things, people, when they are assessed for packages, there's some urgency in getting the services.
Mm, I can imagine.
And urgency, 2 years is not urgent.
No. That's kind of, I've forgotten about it.
Yeah.
And
sorry.
The second problem that I'm seeing is the income-tested fee.
Right.
There is in the generation of people in this space, there is a sense of entitlement that in the past governments have funded aged care.
Yes.
And therefore, why should I pay? The government's used to fund this. They have an expectation that the government will pay.
Right.
And so if they're paying an income-tested fee, it takes a while to convince them of the value of it. So we've had examples of people who did have a package, the rules change, income-tested fee gets introduced, they've turned the package down. Because what they used to get for nothing, they now have to pay a small amount of money for, and they can't see the value in it. And in their mind, it's just a waste of money. So they give the package away, which is quite distressing. In our village, that does cause us some stress because clearly as the years roll on, people's needs increase,
yes,
not diminish.
So yeah. They give the package away as in they don't take
correct.
It up and
yeah.
try and fumble along by themselves?
Yeah. And then we find their neighbours or our staff are having to prop them up, whereas before they had this wonderful concept called a package.
Right.
Of outside providers coming in to service their needs.
And when you're granted a package, you actually have a limited number of days, I think it's 63 from memory, at which you must have chosen a provider, signed up with them, and they've put it on My Aged Care that you've actually picked your package up. Otherwise, you lose your allocation.
So there's no retrospective application then. If I'm qualified, as in Peter's examples, and then decide 18 months down the track, you know what, this is getting out of hand, I need to get on one of these packages, that's no longer possible. That is not possible for me.
No, if you've made your way through to you actually being granted a package,
yes.
you then have 63 days to get it signed, sealed,
and if I don't
delivered.
Take that option?
And if you don't, you lose it.
You start
always,
again.
Forever.
And you get back in the queue.
Oh,
back in the queue.
So it could be another 2 years.
You have to apply again.
Yeah.
And it could.
Earlier on this year, the reforms introduced, where did the initiative, where did the drive for these reforms come from in this area? What was driving it? Government need, government bottom line, finances, care?
Government bottom line.
Really?
Yeah. Bottom line, it's cheaper to keep people in their home than it is in residential care.
So that is the philosophy.
So that's behind it. I mean, we as a society, we cannot afford to have everyone who needs care living in residential care. There's just not enough taxes to pay for that. So we need to keep people at home for longer. It's better for them socially, and it's cheaper for the general public purse. But that being said, the current generation of people receiving this care weren't expecting it. They were expecting to have government provide it for them and then move into residential care if they needed it. So there is a big change. I think it's just come earlier than expected.
So, Kim, how are we damping down those expectations? Is this a government job? Is this a public relations nightmare for them? Or are they going about it? What are they doing?
The government are just... In the last month, I've seen a release that they're putting some funds into educating the general population on My Aged Care. But at this point, it's being left to the providers to be able to, in an open market, promote your services, educate the people.
Well, you guys are in an interesting position then, aren't you, Peter?
Yes.
You're obviously relishing this responsibility.
Yes.
You must be loving it.
There's never a dull moment, I might say.
So what about the feedback, the loop back into the government? You think that you can input into this dynamic and make sure that reform is in process? Is there a review and reform process happening, or what's going on?
There is. We've each of our villages have participated in feedback to the reform process through our peak bodies, through directly to the different places that are asking for feedback, as well as to the minister.
And very fortunately, our current minister, Ken Wyatt, the Minister for Aged Care, is very receptive.
I was about to ask, are they listening to the feedback you're offering?
He is listening. So I've met him on one occasion face to face.
Right.
As has Stuart from the Village Baxter. Were you there, Kim, when they...
No, but I saw him in Queensland the other week with Baptist Care Australia.
He is a man on a mission. And he's very receptive, and he's got a very open mind. So it's very refreshing dealing with that minister.
Mm-hmm.
I must say, I've been in this business for 25 years, and we've had a lot of ministers of different political colours over the years, and some of them have been fantastic and others have been less so.
Right.
This chap, in my view, is top of the tree.
And he really wants to make this work.
He wants to make a difference.
And
he's listening. Mm. Yep.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
That's good.
But in the end, it's going to come down to the sort of realpolitik of dollars and cents, isn't it? And in the end, no matter how much goodwill he might want to input into this reform package, it's going to come down to what Treasury says he's got to allocate.
That is correct.
Do we have to come to a new reality then as we confront retirement and home care and retirement living?
I think it's a bit of... The answer actually depends on the generation. I think for... Currently, the silent generation, it is a big adjustment. For the baby boomers who want total control, it's a, well, that's of course what we're going to have, and how dare you suggest anything otherwise. And there's sort of people caught in the in-between that are not quite sure about whether or not they want that level of control over a package that they don't quite understand the finances. Certainly some of our existing clients have said to me, you know, I used to get 4 hours of care a week. You'd come and do my cleaning. I didn't have to worry about budgets. No one asked me to sign extra agreements and go into complicated arrangements about what I do or want. It was easy because they basically outsourced the service to us. Whereas nowadays we're sitting down and talking to them about budgets and would you prefer so many hours of this or so many hours of that, and it's a lot more control, but it's also a lot more obligation on someone that didn't expect to have that.
And for you as a service provider as well, you have to look at your bottom line and viability as well. I mean, you've got to be able to at least be making some sort of business and reinvesting into what you do. You've got to be able to see some way forward yourself, surely.
Yeah, at this point, our home care services goal is simply to break even. It's no longer a part of the business where we would seek to make a profit, because we spend so much time on talking to people and educating people that we never used to have to do. So for us, the goal is being a not-for-profit just to make our home care service break even.
Wow, that's an interesting positional change, I guess, from a business model perspective.
Yeah.
Do you think all carers are going to be in that space, Peter?
I can only speak from our own personal circumstance. We are a new business. We've only been in business since the 28th of February. So clearly we're in the same boat. We're endeavouring to get to a break-even point. We're all very optimistic about the future. I'm just thinking there was initial talk that this was going to be a major change for the better.
Mm-hmm.
I think the jury's still out on that.
Whether it's better.
I've got no doubt that it's going to take a lot longer than government's thought. I'm thinking the first 12 months, and we're only, 4 or 5 months through that, Kim?
Yeah.
It's been difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, the ministry is listening. They are changing things. They're fine-tuning it. Maybe in 18 months' time, you could ask me the same question, and our aim would be to have, I don't know, 60 or 80 home care packages on the peninsula. And our numbers tell us that is a viable business.
Right.
Currently,
what would it be sitting at now?
Currently,
Peter?
We've got 20.
Right.
And our break-even point, I think, is 40.
Right.
So we're halfway there. We thought we'd be closer to the break-even now, but we're not. But when I analyse why we're not, it's what Kim said. We're spending so much time with people who are confused.
Yes, and
so
don't
understand. So our home care managers, normally you'd think you go to and visit someone and within 15 or 20 minutes... You could move on. No, we're there for an hour and a half.
Right.
And helping them to deal with My Aged Care, helping them to phone, because there's a 1-800 number or you have to go on the website. Now, a lot of our clients don't have a computer or not website savvy.
Yes.
And particularly, this is a very detailed website, so it takes you not one or two clicks to get where you need to be. You might do 10 clicks, and it's all very confusing. I get confused, and my kids tell me that, and they're not surprised.
But we've spoken about the portal in the past, though, and you have mentioned in the past, I think, Peter, that you're a little bit concerned about the degree of difficulty and the assumptions that it's making about your ability to cope with it and the decisions that would be asking you intellectually to make as well.
Yeah. And sometimes things try to be all things to all people. There's the first mistake, I think, because my aged care is not just home care, it's also residential aged care. So
it's for anything, isn't it? If I'm looking
at anything associated with this
nursing home, retirement village,
is there.
Care.
So you can just imagine the algorithms and the behind the scenes stuff in that website to get it
which
to
is
work.
Actually probably quite impressive.
Yes.
If you're into algorithms.
Yes.
But also, that means, you know, people are going there not knowing where they want to go, but having, it's like the shopping centre or the supermarket with just too many things on the shelf, isn't it, really? Yeah.
And as I say, my grandchildren have no fear with computers or their mobile phones. My children have some fear. I have lots of fear. I mean, if I don't understand something, I go nowhere. Now, I think our clients are in that boat.
Yes.
If it's not quite clear to them, if it's ambiguous what to do next, they throw their hands up.
Yes. Yes.
It's all too hard.
So they've made something really that's not, as a tool, is not appropriate to their market right now.
Yep.
It's as their market grows into that.
Yeah.
But there is there is no alternative, is there?
Well, used to be able to call the Peninsula Health and talk to their people, and they were most helpful. Now, those people are still there, but we can no longer ring them. We have to go through My Aged Care.
So what are those people what are those people doing these days if they're not available to be spoken to?
They're still doing the assessments, but they all have to feed back through My Aged Care. It used to be managed on a local level. So when someone was desperate, we could ring up the Manalyzer service and say this person needs an assessment.
They've been waiting for 2 years, blah, blah, blah.
And they could and we'd manage the priority straight away. On the
local they could prioritise it.
Yeah.
Whereas there's no ability. None at all.
No.
It's a national system that is being implemented here.
Yeah.
So surely the feedback would have to be you're going to have to regionalise it to a degree or localise it. Surely that's
going to be... Well, it's been deregionalised. It was regionalised.
But is it not going to be a move back to regionalisation
and
localisation? Surely once they've tested this out.
We would hope.
Because how could you apply, you know, the measures for somebody in, say, DY or Collaroy on the North Shore of Sydney to somebody down here in Hastings or the bottom end of the peninsula? Surely there's going to be massive differences in expectation, lifestyle, facilities,
health systems,
definition of ailment or health systems as well.
Yeah. There's a lot to be worked out. The other big ripple that's going to come through the sector is there's a lot of very new people in this space that have never had any aged care experience before. And they're going to have to go through...
In what part of the sector, though?
Like moving into community care.
Yeah.
So providing packages that have never provided community care before. And as long as you get registered with the Commonwealth, you can do that. But then
I have to do some sort of course or...
No, you need to register as an approved provider that'll soon become a registered provider. But you don't actually have to go and do a specific course as such, although the staff you employ need to have a particular standard. But that'll be evaluated when the accreditation process comes in as that rolls through. Now, we've been through it at the village.
Right.
Peter will have been through the aged care side of it, which is not a lot different to the community care side of it. But when that comes to brand new players, that's going to be a big ripple that comes through because there will be people that don't comply and it'll create a shift in the market.
So as we wrap this up then, what is the advice? What should we take away from this conversation today as we get set or get into this area in terms of our age? What's the single best piece of advice you could give to us as we approach this particular decision?
Talk to a provider that's been in the industry a long time, that's attached to reputable places like the Village Glen, Village Baxter, who will sit down and spend the time to talk to you about what your options are. Don't necessarily rely on a 1-800 number or a website to tell you everything that you need. Find someone that'll talk to you face to face and sit down and have a conversation and work out just what it is that you need to know and where you need to go.
So we're back to that localised conversation again. Yeah. Peter, what would you be suggesting to people as they approach this momentous part of their lives? I mean, this is huge.
Well, it is huge. I think involve your family, because they probably are computer savvy. And Kim's right. I mean, find someone to talk to who has empathy for your circumstance, has knowledge of what's available, and can guide you down that path. And that path, at the moment, is as I understand it, once you go onto My Aged Care and ask for an assessment, so you haven't got a package yet, you haven't even been assessed, that process is currently taking 6 to 8 weeks on the peninsula. That used to take 2 weeks, Kim, to 3 weeks. So there's a wait to start with. Mm-hmm. As I said at the start of the conversation, the problem I see is that the people who are seeing the need, like their families and the people themselves, of support at home is now. So yes. It's not in a year's time, it's now. So clearly they're going down the path of being assessed. They've got to wait 6 or 8 weeks to see someone to assess them. The assessment happens. Then it's another 2 or 3 weeks before that paperwork is presented to you. Then you have to apply through My Aged Care to go on the waiting list to get a package. And
then wait for the package to be allocated. Yeah.
And it's a prioritised system, so the people with the highest priority.
You're talking months now, Peter.
We can be talking months, yeah. So I suppose my advice would be, I think I keep talking about looking over the horizon. Our clients are always planners. My advice to the listening audience would be, if you see some issues in the future, start the process now. Mm. So that when you get to a point where you need the services, you actually have package.
You have everything lined up. Mm. Well, thank you so much, Peter. Thank you also, Kim, for coming in and enlightening us. It does sound like a slightly confusing process for people to go through, but I think that I like your advice of actually searching out for someone who's had experience and can talk to you, because I'm sure there are many people out there listening that have been confused by this, and hopefully we've shone a bit of light on it for them.
We thank you both very much indeed. You're listening to The Aged Age, and of course The Aged Age is made possible with the generous support of the Village Glen Rosebud, the Village Baxter in Frankston South, and Encore Living in Carrum Downs. We are going to take a break, and when we come back after this, we're going to talk about a revitalised country women's association and a $9 billion industry. It's caravanning, and it's big here in Aussie. A break, and then we'll be back. PFM, this is The Aged Age across the Mornington Peninsula and beyond. We're on 98.7, we're on 98.3, and it's great to have your company today. I'm Brendan Telfer, and sitting alongside me is Vicky Barber.
Welcome back to The Aged Stage. Now, our next guest is Marnie Turner, and she's currently the group president of the Country Women's Association down here on the Mornington Peninsula. Hello, Marnie.
Hi, Vicky. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm brilliant on this nice, crisp winter afternoon.
It is a crisp day, isn't it?
We were talking about that earlier on, Marnie, but also, of course, we need to congratulate you as well, because you've recently, of course, got the presidency of the Country Women's Association for the Mornington Peninsula.
Yes, I have. Thank you very, very much.
So, 90 years old, is it relevant in the modern world?
I think the best thing about the Country Women's Association that I've learnt so far in my 4 years as a member is that it is constantly evolving. So they did start out basically being a place where mums could go into town with their husbands when they went in for work and whatnot with the kids. And that actually started our first ever maternal health centres. So that's actually how that started, and that was relevant at that time. Then they've moved through things. Like, you'll notice on our highways we have a white line on the outside of the highway. That was actually the Country Women's Association that got that happening, because we had a number of runoff road crashes. So they're constantly evolving, and now we are trying to lobby for marriage equality.
Fantastic. And so now I'm sure people won't mind us letting them know, but Marnie, you're only 33. So you're
I actually turned 34 on Friday.
Oh, so happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Marnie.
But you're probably the most likely the youngest group president for the peninsula, and would that be across the board? Like, are there more younger women joining the CWA now and seeing its changes and how it is more relevant to we women at this time?
Yeah, absolutely. It's when I first joined, a lot of the ladies said, yes, you're the youngest member we've had in a very long time. And when I became the president, they just said, we're pretty sure that you're the youngest we've had on the peninsula. And then I headed up to head office and I thought, right, I'm going to be the youngest again. And I wasn't.
Oh, okay.
We actually have a member up at Collingwood branch. So everyone thinks it's the country, but we have a branch right in the middle of Collingwood.
Fantastic.
And their group president up there, Jemima, she's 32.
Wonderful. So what is the appeal then for younger? So, for example, I'm in my later 40s. So what would appeal to me to join the Country Women's Association, for example? And I know it's not just for younger women, but how is it appealing to someone such as myself?
I think the great thing about it is it does appeal to that broad range. So we actually go from 8-year-olds as a junior member through to 20, about 25, 26 when they become a normal member.
All right.
And then we go right through to 100 years of age, and beyond. Like if anyone's beyond 100 and they're a member, they are still a member and a very active one at that.
And so they should be.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the greatest thing is we actually had a member who was in her 40s, and she moved into her neighbourhood. Her husband was in the army, so they moved around quite a lot. She moved into her neighbourhood in just Lang Warren and found that she was the only woman who was home during the week.
Right.
So she suddenly, in the middle of Lang Warren, felt isolated.
Yes.
And most people wouldn't think about things like that in our area on the peninsula. We're all pretty connected and pretty close to each other. So she went to her local community house and found they had nothing for her. She wasn't a senior citizen. She wasn't young. She wasn't needing assistance with drugs or alcohol. She wasn't on the breadline. So she found there actually was nothing for her, and then she discovered the CWA. And so for her, it was about friendship and about fellowship.
Yes.
For me, it's been amazing. I have a 2.5-year-old, and when I joined, I was not quite pregnant. but I have found the greatest parental support for me. Just the ladies coming in and providing me with information, people who used to be lactation consultants, things like that, who would just provide me with so much guidance and so much support while teaching me to crochet and knit.
So there's still a cross-section of ages and women within the CWA, and obviously very supportive of other women and their families and children. Is that what I'm picking up?
Absolutely. So my daughter, she attends a lot of our meetings and our craft afternoons, and the ladies just love her. We actually visited Rosebud East Branch 2 weeks ago. They celebrated their 54th birthday as a branch here on the peninsula, and she had the maracas out. We had a singer who was singing and entertaining everyone, and my daughter was in the middle creating the dance floor.
I love it.
So there really is something for everyone.
So you're mentioning some of the local branches then, Marnie. Who and where and how do we get involved, or how do women get involved? How do they contact you? And
yeah, we have branches from right down in Rosebud. So we've got two branches in Rosebud, Rosebud and Rosebud East, right through to Piercedale, from Mornington, right across to Somerville and Balnarring. So there are 10 branches right across the peninsula. We do have a Facebook page. So if you Google CWA Mornington Peninsula, that will pop up, as will our blog spot. We've got a bit of a website as well. If anyone does have a pen on them, we do have a website. It's www.cwaofvic, so cwaofvic.org.au, and that will get you through to head office. There's some phone numbers and some emails, and I am happy to take calls at any time. So I will give my number out. It's 0409 140 508. And I'm happy to have a chat with anyone who wants to learn anything more about the CWA. But on the 5th of August, we do have a get-together in Red Hill at the Long Table. So I would love it if anyone wants to come along to that. There is information on our website. But just pop along and learn everything there is to learn about the CWA and have a chat with me.
We do a lot of work with the Village Glen in Baxter, the Village Glen in Rosebud, Village Baxter in Frankston South, and also Freedom to Go Out in Carrum Downs. Just wondering whether you have any affiliation with any of those sorts of residences, Marnie?
Other than people who may be members of the CWA, we don't really get into those areas. But in the coming 2 years of my term as president, that is my plan. Instead of expecting everybody to come to us, we'll be going out to them. So people can expect to see us at places like Village Glen and retirement villages. They can expect to see us at the local farmers market, at the Western Port Festival, at Australia Day in Mornington. You'll see us. So we'll be visible in the next 2 years, and you won't stop hearing about CWA.
Marnie, how old is your little girl?
She's 2.5.
Well, with that and all the work that you've just set yourself, you have got quite an agenda,
yes,
I think.
Yes, you do. You have your hands full, your hands full. But, I mean, for me, it sounds very appealing. It's more than, as you just said, it's more than just learning how to crochet or knit or whatever. It's about that connectivity between women. But what I find appealing, it's between generations as well, which I think we don't do enough of unless it's your own family. So the CWA seems to offer a lot of opportunity there to connect with other women at different ages, different levels as well, Marnie. So I think it's wonderful work that you're doing. I might have to come to the long table.
Thank you. We would love to see you there.
She would be a great addition, let me tell you, Marnie Turner. You would really like the input of Vicky. I'm sure you'd get along extremely well with her. Marnie Turner, thank you very much indeed. We will try and get that number back out to people as well if they're interested. It's here at the radio station as well. We thank you for your time joining us today on The Age Stage. We wish you all power, all success, and we hope that the Country Women's Association goes from strength to strength.
Thank you so much for having me this afternoon. I really appreciate it.
Good on you, Marnie. Thank you very much indeed. And that was Marnie Turner, who at 34 years of age, I think Vicky is possibly the youngest group president of the Peninsula Division of the CWA.
I think that's commendable.
It is very commendable. This is The Age Stage across the Mornington Peninsula. So watch out, those of you that might be listening down there with our friends. You might be getting a visit from Marnie at the Village Glen, Village Baxter, or indeed Encore Living. And they, of course, are generous contributors to us here at RWPFM and make this conversation with you possible. We thank them for their support. RWPFM, when we come back, we're going to be talking to a gentleman who's partly responsible for a $19 billion industry. It's caravanning, and it's happening right here in Australia. Back in just a moment. And you're not alone because you're with us here on RWPFM. This is The Age Stage across the Mornington Peninsula and beyond. Great to have your company. This is The Age Stage. It's made possible by our friends at the Village Glen in Rosebud, the Village Baxter in Frankston South, and Freedom to Go in Caron Downs, Encore Living. We thank them all very much indeed. Great to have your company. I bet you don't realise that the Australian caravan industry has now jumped out to $19 billion worth of value. And indeed, here in Victoria, we contribute a great percentage of that. And to join us on The Age Stage and tell us a little bit about it is from the Victorian, and the CEO, indeed, of the Caravan Association of Victoria is Rob Lucas. Rob, hi, welcome.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
Great to have your company. I'm here thank with you. Vicky Barber. You're joining us for The Age Stage.
Hi, Rob. How
hi,
are
Vicky.
You?
How are you? Good, thank you.
That's good. A $19 billion industry. That's a lot of caravans.
It certainly is, and I think it's one of those things that somewhat surprises most people in Australia that we're such a large industry. Perhaps because we're a leisure-based industry that we fly a little bit under the radar, but it is a significant industry in Australia and certainly in Victoria.
Yes. Now, first question from me is, are most of those caravans built here in Australia as well? So that's, you know, they're built, they're created, there's jobs creating those actual caravans versus them being imported, et cetera. I'm sure there's probably a mix, but is it a large manufacturing industry as well?
Yes, Vicky, yeah. In Australia, I think last year, nearly 22,000 brand-new recreational vehicles were manufactured.
Wow.
And about another 5,000 to 8,000 were imported. So a very large manufacturing base. And in fact, in
that's
Victoria...
Brilliant.
Yeah, look, it is great. It's a great Australian story. In Victoria, nearly 90% of all recreational vehicles, of that 22,000, were actually made in Victoria, where the heartland of the manufacturing industry for recreational vehicles. And so it employs, at the last what we call our census count, where we looked at the numbers, in excess of about 5,600 to 5,700 people directly employed in Victoria.
Well, that's great to see that we're still building things.
Absolutely.
And designing them. And
quite essentially still an Australian design. And what we've seen in the past 3 years in particular is a great deal of interest from overseas in our brands and in our product, which just goes to show you how good it is.
Is this an Australian thing then, Rob? Are we talking about caravanning en masse here in Australia, or is this a worldwide phenomenon that we just happen to be tapped into?
No, it's worldwide, Brendan. If you look at the markets in Europe and America, and there's a large market in South Africa, those nations which have got a propensity to travel and be outdoors are are industry, industries which attract the people. And in real terms, Australia is a large player in that, even though if you look at the manufactured product out of America, which I think is about 350,000 units a year per capita, we Australians are right up there with the world of users of caravan and camping.
Are they all grey nomads, Rob?
Look, no, they're not all, but I've got to say the definition of grey nomad is slipping a little bit these days because everyone keeps saying 60s 50 and 70s 60 and the new ages. But look, no, but the grey nomads make up still well in excess of 50 to 60% of the marketplace.
It's amazing. We're talking to and we're supported by a number of people here on the Mornington Peninsula that live in residences and stuff up and down the Mornington Peninsula. And I notice these days that there's a lot of provisioning for caravans and caravanning within those residences as well.
Yes, absolutely. We've seen in the last 5 years in particular where people wishing to downsize still have a great desire to travel, but downsized, that we've seen many of the providers of those types of accommodation now needing to put storage units or storage yards on site so to attract the people who are still very active in their travel.
What about the technology that goes into the caravans, Rob? Is it changing? Is this growing quickly? Is it developing fast?
Yes, absolutely. And I think most people realise that technology today is moving at a breakneck speed. And caravanning is exactly the same. It was only less than 5 to 7 years ago when people started to talk about solar energy in their caravans. Now, fundamentally, caravans don't get sold without a solar energy pack.
Right. So people are taking their own solar pack with
them absolutely
as they go travelling and can power themselves up.
Yeah, absolutely, Vicky. And the technology and the battery capacity has just gone through the roof. It's just so fantastic for people to use. Of course, then there's a wide range of electronic equipment now is now made available within caravans. And so you've only got to look at stoves and fridges and the generational change of those models with the major supplies industry who have taken up the new technology and now it's been represented in caravan.
Very quickly, Rob, before we have to wrap it up, you're going to be recommending an Australian manufacturer because you would say that the caravan built locally knows and can withstand the Australian conditions rather than, say, a lightweight European?
Well, I'd probably get shot if I didn't say that.
Thought you might.
Look, the truth is that we do make caravans to our conditions. There are some, and in truth, there are some fantastic imported product. So long as they meet the Australian standards, so long as they meet the requirements of legislation, then all is good, and the Australian product does that.
Be that as it may, you're also going to suggest to me, I'm sure, that you could get me into a caravan as I contemplate retirement at a very reasonable price these days as well, and it's not going to be a big impost as I go about organising my finances as I get into that retirement space.
Yeah, for sure, Brendan. I think one of the great advantages of our industry, there's a price point for everybody. So if you wanted to go to the top, you'll get the top and it'll come with a price point. If you want something a little bit more modest, then you're going to get something which is spectacular, but at that price range. So certainly, and certainly, Brendan, if you're ready, give us a call. I know some people.
thank you very much indeed. I'm sure you know some fantastic people in the industry, Rob Lucas. You are the CEO of Caravan Association of Victoria. It's great to have you on the show today. Trends then, you must be seeing trends in the market. Obviously, the growth is pretty spectacular for you, is it?
Yes, it is. I say often that the love affair with caravan and camping right now is as strong as at any point in history. It seems to be that the demand for our product has not found a new place, but has just kept increasing. And I think some of that relates to people wanting to get away. And some of the things we've seen in the last 2 years in particular is a trend for families to come back into our market. We've been dominated fundamentally by the grey nomad market, but we're now seeing grey nomads taking their grandchildren away and families travelling in convoys, if you like. So it's really been a very interesting trend, seeing that trend in the last 2 years.
And is that drawn upon from, you know, the affordability of once you've got your van, you've got this luxurious hotel, so to speak, at the back of your car and you can go wherever you want. So is that what the appeal is? Is that freedom and affordability?
Yeah, I think so, Vicky. I think our lifestyle just provides this sense of freedom and travel where you'd like to go at any point in time, whether you're travelling into caravan parks or you're staying out in the middle of nowhere in the outback. Just this capacity to go where you like.
And also be connected. Recently driving along the freeway and saw, you know, the caravan with the two names, whether it was Mary and John and their VHF number.
Yeah.
And my husband and I both said, now, wouldn't that be nice? You pull on up and people can just connect with you and you know, have a glass of wine at the end of your day. You've pulled into some new caravan park or by the river, wherever you're pulling up, so to speak. So yeah. I suppose it's that connectivity as well.
Yeah, absolutely, Vicky. I think that's one of the great things about our industry. You'll contact people on the road and catch up with them at the next caravan park, and then all of a sudden you might be having a wine or a beer, and then you're starting sharing a meal, and all of a sudden you've created a whole set of new friends.
Yes, that's lovely.
It's the great thing, and I often say, particularly from a family's perspective, you might go on a holiday, go into a caravan park, and your children have now got 20 or 30 new friends they didn't know they had. But I think it's also true of the adults, and I've certainly, through my work in the association, when I come into caravan parks, I don't often get too many people when I'm in a hotel room asking me what type of hotel room I've got.
Yes.
But if I pull up in my caravan, they'll see what sort of gadgets I've got, and what the new deck chairs I've got, and where'd you get that table from,
and how well you can reverse it as well, Rob.
Absolutely.
Love your work. Rob Lucas, thank you so much indeed for joining us on the Age Stage today. We will stay in touch with you as well, Rob, because we talk to a lot of people that I think are probably into your market and probably got a lot of questions. We might get a few of those questions and maybe get you back on the show one of these days.
Love to. Thank you very much.
Good
thanks,
on you.
Brendan.
Thank you very
thanks,
much.
Vicky.
Thanks, Rob.
Rob Lucas, the CEO of Caravan Association of Victoria. And Vicky, that just about wraps it up for another week here on the Age Stage.
It goes so fast for us.
It Brendan. Does indeed. But before we go, we must thank our guests, of course, Peter and Kim, who dropped by today.
Yes, to speak about home care and the packages.
And Marnie Turner, the new group president of the Country Women's Association for the Mornington Peninsula. We thank her very much indeed as
Definitely.
Well. Definitely. Vicky Barber, thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure, Brendan.
And before I go, thank you very much indeed to the Village Glen in Rosebud, the Village Baxter in Frankston South, and also Encore Living in Carrum Downs. They support us so that we can support you. See you next week.